Dieser Podcast ist Teil des Podcast-Netzwerks dbp.dw. Die besten Podcasts der Welt.
Martin! Ja, wir haben es mal wieder geschafft.
Ja.
Und diesmal sind wir tatsächlich an einem neuen Ort.
Richtig, ja. Wieso?
Ja, warum eigentlich? Und warum haben wir so lange nichts mehr von uns hören lassen?
Sag doch mal.
Ja, also ich bin tatsächlich umgezogen. Aus meiner alten, eigentlich gar nicht alten Heimat, sondern in die alte Heimat, von der neuen Heimat in die alte Heimat. Und jetzt fühle ich mich wohler.
Ja. Wer das verstanden hat, kann es mir auch im Anschluss nochmal erklären.
Ja, also rückwärts, muss man denken.
Richtig. Ja, und wir sitzen jetzt in Martins neuen vier Wänden und auch ich bin an dieser Stelle wieder live mit Martin vor Ort.
Ja, richtig.
Und wir hatten beide doch irgendwie auch viel zu tun in den letzten paar Wochen.
Das ist wahr, ja.
Ja, und das hat uns dann doch auch relativ viel von der Zeit geraubt, die wir normalerweise in die Zeit unseres geliebten Podcasts Zimmerlautstärke stecken und
völlig richtig.
All euch tolle Hörerinnen und Hörer, die uns regelmäßig hören, auch immer noch, auch obwohl wir gar nichts rausgebracht haben, auch die alten Folgen hören, was wir sehr schön finden.
Diese alten Folgen.
Diese furchtbaren alten Folgen.
Ja.
Nein, also ihr habt wahrscheinlich schon sehnsüchtig auf die nächste Folge gewartet und jetzt plötzlich ist das passiert, was wir gerade machen. Nämlich ist ja jetzt nicht die erste Sonderfolge, die wir machen und das ist,
ein neues Format.
Diesmal ist es wirklich ein komplett eigenständiges neues Format, was auch nicht in die normale Zimmerlautstärken-Serie reinfällt und, die grundsätzliche Idee ist einfach, dass wir, und die Idee ist jetzt auch nicht neu, wir wollten das schon vor einiger Zeit mal starten, aber dass wir uns mit den Künstlerinnen und Künstlern und mit den Bands und Projekten mal persönlich auseinandersetzen und mit ihnen in Kontakt treten und mit ihnen sprechen. Und das haben wir jetzt einfach mal angefangen. Und
heute, ja, du hast das einfach mal gestartet.
Ja, stimmt. Ja, ich habe gar nichts davon erzählt.
Ja, der Plan gab es lange, aber du hast es einfach mal umgesetzt, was ja sehr löblich ist.
Ja, die Gelegenheit war im Schopfe.
Und deswegen bin ich jetzt auf der Seite, der jetzt noch gar nichts ahnt oder weiß,
Genau. Was
jetzt passiert.
Genau. Also es ist eine doppelt so große Überraschung, denn normalerweise unser übliches Konzept läuft ja normalerweise so, dass wir uns gegenseitig einen Song bringen. Genau. Aber wenigstens ist, und das ist ja dann auch keine Überraschung, also die Überraschung ist ja dann der Song, aber das Konzept ist ja keine, weil wir wissen ja, was wir grundsätzlich miteinander vorhaben. Aber jetzt ist es ein bisschen was anderes. Jetzt ist es ein bisschen individueller, auch natürlich der Tatsache geschuldet, dass man natürlich auch bei einem Interview nicht wirklich weiß, was da auf einen zukommt. Wenn man das ein bisschen, ich sag mal, anders führen möchte. Wir hatten ja auch schon ein paar Mal das Beispiel unserer besten Fragen, die man einer Band stellen sollte in einem Interview.
Ah ja, stimmt, genau, ich erinnere mich.
Ja. Yeah.
Das war die erste Portugal-Folge.
Ja, genau. Genau, ich glaube, wir haben es in der letzten Folge oder vorletzten Folge auch nochmal aufgewärmt.
Das kann sein.
Ja, und die Liste auch dann mal erweitert und ein paar andere.
Noch in der Mikrowelle nochmal das Essen vom letzten Jahr warm gemacht.
Genau. Naja, jedenfalls das Ziel unserer Interviewreihe sollte eigentlich das sein, ein bisschen hinter die Kulissen zu blicken und sich auch mit Bands so zu beschäftigen,
dass die auch mal zu Wort kommen.
Ja, genau. Einmal das und zweitens, dass wir auch mit einer entsprechenden Vorbereitung darauf zugehen und wirklich wissen, auf wen wir uns da einlassen. Denn ich habe in der Zwischenzeit auch noch etliche andere Interviews mir angeguckt und auch gelesen. Und es ist echt so, die Fragen, die da, oder der Kram, der da kommt, ist immer die gleichen generischen, irrelevanten, irgendwie, was war das Verrückteste, was jemals auf einer Tour passiert? Weil, was ist dein Lieblingseis? Also, das ist echt alles so Quatsch, ja. Und das ist also so austauschbar. Und genau in die Richtung wollte ich jetzt gerade auch mit dem Erstlingsinterview nicht gehen.
Gehen.
Und es hat dann nicht funktioniert. Und und das ist auf jeden Fall ganz spannend gewesen. Martin hat keine Ahnung, was ihn jetzt erwartet. Martin, ich erwarte jetzt erwartet eine Band. Zwei Dinge, die jetzt auf dich zukommen. Das eine ist, ich muss dir jetzt erstmal was von der Band zeigen, damit du weißt, um was es überhaupt geht.
Stimmt.
Genau. Und das zweite wäre, dass wir uns dann gemeinsam das Interview anhören und du dann da hoffentlich genauso viel Freude empfinden wirst, wie unsere Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer vor den Geräten.
Es kommen jetzt die Beatles.
Ja, nein, die Beatles hatten, für die Beatles hatte ich keine Zeit.
Ja, Paul McCartney hatte angefragt, aber wir mussten leider ablehnen.
Ja, ich hab ihn aber dafür an den Commodore Schmidt Lab verwiesen, der ein riesen Fan ist.
Ja, also Paul hatte gemeint, er fährt dann gleich mal vorbei.
Richtig, ja. Und ja, also Spaß beiseite. Martin, ich habe dir ein tolles Projekt mitgebracht und ich steige direkt irgendwie mit was völlig Geistgestörtem ein. Also wirklich es ist ein Projekt, bei dem ich weiß, dass du wahrscheinlich einer der wenigen Menschen bist, die wirklich zu schätzen wissen, was da passiert.
Okay. Das sind große Worte.
Ganz genau. Jetzt hast du die Wahl. Wir haben
Nehme B.
Gut. Dann würde ich sagen, gucken wir uns das Video dieser Band gleich mal an.
Yeah.
Es ist ein Live-Mitschnitt von der Aufnahme von deren Album.
Mhm.
Ja.
Mhm.
Und es ist so ein bisschen so ein Querschnitt durch die Songs des Albums.
Mhm.
Und das Schöne daran ist, dass man auch dann die Musiker live dabei sieht, wie sie performen, was sie da tun.
Es ist verrückt.
Völlig.
Ja, ja.
Total absonderlich, aber genau. Normalerweise sollte man die Kamera ja einschalten, nachdem die Band gegangen ist. In diesem Fall war die Band aber noch da. Und wenn du möchtest, können wir uns das angucken. Die Alternative wäre gewesen, oder die Alternative wäre, das wäre dann A, dass wir einfach mal in das Album reinhören. Denn das
können wir eigentlich beides machen?
Wir können beides machen, aber das muss nicht sein. Ich glaube, wenn man...
So gut ist das auch nicht.
Also, nee, ich glaube, beides sollte man nicht hintereinander machen.
Okay.
Ja,
also du hast Angst um meine geistige Gesundheit.
Ja, nicht nur um deine, auch um euch da draußen. Ja, also cool. Ja, wir haben ja auch irgendwo eine Verantwortung.
Was? Wo so ein Kleingedruckten stehen.
Richtig. Und die, deswegen würde ich einfach sagen, eine von den beiden Optionen sollten gezogen werden. Das Album ist auch gar nicht so lange. Es ist ganz, ganz frisch. Es kam vor, ich glaube, 2 Wochen raus.
Ach komm.
Ja. Deswegen ist es auch brand new.
Ist ja noch ganz warm.
Ja, klar. Brauchst noch Topflappen.
Ja, der Kater saß drauf.
Ja, und das Video, oder ich finde das Video eigentlich besser zum Zeigen, weil, wie gesagt, dann kriegt man auch so einen Eindruck davon, was da passiert.
Ja. Gut, ich überlege nochmal. Ich nehme B.
Okay. Gut. Martin, dann würde ich dich dazu einladen, dass wir uns das jetzt gemeinsam anschauen.
Sehr gerne.
Und ihr da draußen, ihr könnt es auch sehen. Und zwar, wenn ihr jetzt mit eurem Podcatcher unseren Podcast hört, dann natürlich nicht. Aber ihr könnt jetzt genau Pause drücken und auf zimmerlautstärke.jetzt gehen. Und dort werdet ihr in der Rubrik der Interviews dann das Video direkt unter dem Podcast finden. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß und eine gute Unterhaltung mit der Band The Rite of Trio. Martin, das Wort gehört dir.
Ja. Ich möchte sagen, ich habe nie, das ist jetzt übertrieben, aber ich habe selten etwas so konsequent in sich Logisches gesehen. Weil es macht alles Sinn. Also es ist halt einfach... ich würde sagen, also wenn man an einem Ort am weitesten vom Mainstream weg sein kann, dann waren wir da jetzt gerade. Mhm. Und das war wirklich, also aus meiner Sicht, ganz, 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 ganz großartig. Also die sind ja zu dritt in dem Studio und fangen einfach an. Und da haben wir ja den Kontrabassist und einen Gitarristen und einen Schlagzeuger. Der Schlagzeuger ist auch interessant, wie der sein Schlagzeug ausgestattet hat, also welche aus welchen Teilen das Schlagzeug besteht. Da ist ja so eine Art, so auch so ein Windspiel oder so ist dabei, dann irgendwelche kleinen Schüsselchen oder so und irgendwelche Glöckchen noch und so Zeug.
Bleche
und,
hängen da rum.
Ja, genau. Und also ich meine, das habe ich jetzt oft genug gesagt, aber das fasziniert mich ja immer wieder, irgendwie so Thema Schlagzeuger und wie die eben dann auch abfahren können und wie unterschiedlich man auch Schlagzeug spielen kann. Gleichzeitig aber auch sehr präzise. Und der Gitarrist hat ja auch eine interessante Rolle. Mhm. Und der gute Mensch mit seinem Kontrabass, der ist natürlich auch, also es hat ja eher so auch seine Show-Elemente, ne? Also das geht ja nicht nur um die reine Musikdarbietung oder das Musikspielen, sondern es gibt ja da wirklich so eine Interaktion dann zwischen den dreien, die aber auch mal irgendwie auch, zumindest jetzt beim ersten Schauen, mal völlig losgelöst voneinander auch stattfindet, wo ja auch dann in Form des Videos so ein Dreier-Split-Screen dann irgendwie so gelöst ist, die ja auch fast also fremd zueinander wirken. Mhm. Was ja auch die Musik auch generell so ein bisschen darstellt. Ne? Mhm. Da haben wir auch Passagen, sage ich mal, wo ja nicht unbedingt Harmonie im Vordergrund steht. Ja.
Nein, Harmonie wird da ganz bewusst kleingestellt.
Richtig, genau. Oder nahezu ausgeklammert. Ja. Und ja, also ich fand mich super unterhalten auf der einen Seite. Also in keinem Falle irgendwie genervt oder irritiert, sondern das war für mich alles, wie ich am Anfang gesagt habe, auch logisch. Also die Verrücktheit und die Abgedrehtheit und das aufs erste Hören unrhythmische ist natürlich, also muss so sein, so als erstes Mal, zum Einstieg vielleicht.
Ja. Ja, also vielleicht noch ergänzend, das wird dann auch jetzt in dem Interview dann auch dann nochmal gesagt, aber ich wollte es einfach vorneweg nochmal bringen. Da steht ja auch so ein Text am Anfang und am Ende.
Ja, ja.
Da, und das ist im Endeffekt so die Inspiration, so die Grundlage für die Idee, die dahinter steht. Im Endeffekt sind das Auszüge aus einem Brief, den hat Antonin Artaud geschrieben in den 20er Jahren, es war 1925, da gab es so eine Art Zeitschrift, nur mit wenigen Auflagen von aus Paris, von einer Gruppe von Surrealisten aus Paris. Und er hat im Endeffekt einen offenen Brief an die Medical Directors of Lunatic Asylums. An die ist es gerichtet. Und eigentlich sagt er unterm Strich, dass eigentlich nur die gewaltsame Unterdrückung und Unterbindung von denen oder das Wegsperren, das die einzige Waffe ist, die wir haben gegen die freie Entfaltung des Deliriums. Ja. Und, ja, die Offenheit dafür. Halt, ja. Und darum geht's halt. Also zum Beispiel auch der Satz, you don't mind if we laugh, ist auch ein Satz aus diesem Brief. So, ist kein langer Brief, zwei Seiten. Ich stelle ihn euch online. Ich habe ihn im Internet gefunden, eine englische Version. Also es hat so eine Bezugnahme dazu. Und wenn man das dann weiß dann, und dann nochmal guckt, dann macht das sogar noch mehr Sinn, weil dann versteht man auch, was da eigentlich passiert. Und es ist ja auch quasi wie so eine Reise. Und ja, da schließt sich dann am Ende auch wieder, wenn man das Album dann hört, das Album, also das, was wir gerade gehört haben, sind im Endeffekt, waren zusammen oder war so eine Art Collage aus einzelnen Teilen von den einzelnen Werken aus dem Album.
Ja.
Und das Album ist nochmal echt klanglich und auch von der Struktur her nochmal eine absolut einige Stufen besser. Mhm. Aber ich finde halt das Video schon sehr gut, weil das einen Eindruck darüber vermittelt, um was es eigentlich geht. Und das fehlt dann wiederum auf dem Album, meiner Meinung nach. Ja. Also gerade so. Und diese sogenannten Show-Einlagen sind zum Teil natürlich auch welche, aber auch manchmal sind das keine. Also es gibt beispielsweise die erste Szene, wo oder das erste Mal, wo der Gitarrist dann irgendwie sagt, so, ey, hört auf, irgendwie, für die, die des Portugiesischen nicht mächtig sind, der Gitarrist fängt bei Minute X, ich weiß es nicht, sagt er so, ey, das war jetzt irgendwie alles nix, ich will jetzt irgendwie aufhören, es klappt so nicht und so weiter und so fort. Und dann diskutiert er ja mit dem Kontrabassisten und das ist halt wirklich passiert. Also es war keine Show-Einlage. Das haben die ja dann drin gelassen und haben dann trotzdem weitergemacht. Und grundsätzlich geht es einfach darum, es ist wie so eine Art Experiment, was passiert, wenn man dem Delirium einfach freie Bahn lässt. Und als ich mit der Band auch gesprochen habe, ich meine, klar, man wird es jetzt auch im Interview hören, aber das war auch so im Vorgespräch, haben sie auch gesagt, relativ klar, dass es auch manchmal darum geht, dass einer von denen halt auch über die Klippe springt, musikalisch, und es ist immer unklar ist, ob die anderen mitgehen oder nicht. Und wenn sie halt nicht mitgehen, dann klappt das halt alles nicht. Und wenn sie halt so weit sind, mitzugehen und den anderen quasi so hinterher zu springen, dann wird halt wirklich großartige Kunst draus. Es ist nicht so, als würden die irgendwas einstudieren und dann irgendwie Theater mit Musik verknüpfen, sondern die lassen sich wirklich komplett darauf ein und die sind dann auch danach auch echt fertig. So. Also es ist echt krass. Ja. Wobei ich nicht sagen möchte, dass es beim Theater anders ist. Ich glaube, wenn man beim Theater seine Rolle irgendwie wirklich durch und durch spielt und den anderen Charakter auch wirklich repräsentiert auf der Bühne, ist man danach genauso am Arsch. Ja. Also ich halte das schon für sehr ähnlich. Aber in der Musik findet man das eigentlich so relativ selten. Ja. Also Leute verlieren sich oftmals dann so in ihrem Instrument und gehen dann darin auf. Sind dann auch im Schwitzen irgendwann. Ja. Aber was die halt machen, ist ja, sie versuchen ja alle zusammen im Endeffekt so diesen Weg. Das ist ein bisschen crazy. Ich denke, wenn du das Interview hörst, wenn ihr draußen das Interview hört, werden auch so ein paar Fragen nochmal klarer. Abschließend sei nochmal gesagt, weil ich werde es bestimmt nachher vergessen zu erwähnen. Als das Interview fertig war, haben wir uns noch ein bisschen weiter unterhalten. Und irgendwann, natürlich, kam die Diskussion auf Didn't You Escape Plan. Woraufhin mir der Gitarrist sagte, ja, das ist ja einer unserer größten Einflüsse. Da bin ich natürlich lachend vom Stuhl gefallen. Und habe mich natürlich sehr geärgert, dass es nicht mit auf dem Interview war, weil es wäre keine Zimmerlautstärken-Episode, wenn nicht mindestens einmal. Ihr wisst, ihr kennt den Rest. Gut. Aber ich würde sagen, dann hören wir doch mal ins Interview rein. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß.
Und ja,
dann,
cool. Freue ich mich total drauf.
Martin, wir sprechen uns dann im Anschluss nochmal. Ja? Okay. Ja, klar. Also, viel Spaß.
Just arrived. We're about to start.
The pizza has arrived, which is actually, yeah, it's really the best start we can have.
Yeah, let's set up.
So we're setting up the pizza as we speak.
Yeah. Okay. So what kind of pizza do we have?
So I've heard carbonara.
Are we on?
Yeah.
So we have some cheese bites. This is good for the whole family. Everybody enjoys it. We have a margarita here. Medium, then we have a pepperoni lovers.
Yeah, that's big. Me.
And then we have a carbonara that I've tweaked a little bit so that
vegetarian. We all share.
It's actually quite good. Did you actually know that margarita originally is with an egg?
I didn't know.
No? Yeah, there is an egg on top. That's the reason why it's called margarita, because it looks like a margarita.
Oh, wow.
Oh, now everything makes sense. Yeah, but that's really...
You just resolved a world-class enigma.
How do you get access to these kinds of information?
Just don't ask, Philippe. Okay. Don't ask. Let's talk about this some other time. So, to everybody at home, to everybody in Germany listening to this, I'm sitting here and I'm having a pizza with three wonderful guys. André Bast Silva, Philippe Lohr, and Pedro Melo Alves.
Oh, yes.
Also known as the Rites of Trio. They're playing jazz. You gave it a strange name, like I heard
Jambacore. I don't. Do I have to get dig into this, or is it?
We can.
Yeah. Can we? Yeah. So please tell me. Tell me what you want to. Who wants?
It started with Andre, so probably.
Okay, Andre, just tell me what it is.
Yeah, jamba was it was a term that I used to describe Pedro Alves in a rehearsal because I think he was always coming late. So
you don't think you know.
So it's a term that you can use when you want to say that someone isn't cool or whatever.
Stupid.
Yeah. And eventually, well, we started playing our music, and I think somebody, maybe I had the idea, like, what if we created
a genre,
and then we would sell it. And, you know, people would start believing it and people would start using it as if it's something real and legit. And so we created, jazz jambacore, which, of course, it comes from jamba, the term that I was calling Pedro, and core, of course, from, you know, hardcore or whatever.
Something
core. And eventually the critics and journalists and everyone started using that term to describe. And, we haven't had any other bands coming up with or calling themselves jazz jambacore. We're still hoping for that.
No, we're waiting. Maybe it's going to be now.
Yeah.
Are we still jazz jambacore? Question.
We are just jambacore now.
No, shit.
So it's an we are getting deeper into the jamba and into the core.
And less into the jazz.
So we are...
Too much information for Sebastian.
We are the undisputed kings of jambacore still.
I have no doubts about that. So jambacore it is. Okay. You just released an album. Congratulations, guys.
Woo!
It's called Free Development of Delirium. It was released now on the 15th, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, 6 days ago or something?
Less, 3 days ago, actually.
It's 3 days ago. Okay, yes, I'm not good on dates. It was released on Clean Feed, which is a Portuguese label, right?
Yeah. Even though with a large international scope, nobody knows that's Portuguese, actually. If you ask worldwide, everybody think it's probably American or something.
Yeah, I was also kind of, because, I mean, the name is, if you are a bit into jazz, I never thought it would be Portuguese.
Yeah, because it's really a big scale label for this kind of contemporary jazz, let's call it.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, when I came to Portugal, I even didn't know that Moonspell was Portuguese, so forgive me.
I didn't know Moonspell was Portuguese.
Yeah, so but it's your second album, right? And you are playing together since when? 2013, something like that.
2012. Yeah, we're actually making next year 10 years of existence as a band. Even though our first concert was in 2013, so if we judge it by the day of the concert, mm-hmm. it will be in 2 years that we do the 10th anniversary. Yeah. But it's a big thing. 10 years.
Yeah.
We don't hate each other yet.
Well,
I think Pedro's official archive of recordings. There's recordings from 2012. So,
okay. Yeah, I was just going after what date did you open up your Facebook page? So I thought it would be like the first step to do as a band. Like, we need a name and a Facebook page. Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. That happened
in April 2013. That's when we decided, like,
okay,
this is going to be real from now on.
Yeah. This is going to be public.
Yeah.
So in 2015, you released your first album.
It was 2015. Recorded in 2014, released in 2000 in the end of 2015, and it almost felt like it was released in 2016. And it actually got into lists of best albums of both 2015 and 16 because it really seemed like it was a 16 album.
That's a really jamba thing to do.
It had that. You know, most critics will say that it already has a 2016 feel to it, you know? Every music specialist, they hear it and they listen to it and they're like, no, this is definitely 2016 already.
It was so progressive. 2015, you were just like ahead of your time.
Yes.
So getting all the evil of the piston collar, that's what it's called.
Oh, actually, you asked the right person. That stupid thing came from me. But it was also by accident.
So this was a thing. So back then, the three of us were still on Facebook, not anymore. Yeah. And we had a private group where we would exchange our documents and our recordings and, well, where we would plan our band business. And somewhere in there, I don't even know what we were talking about, but we wrote like an inner private post about something. And in the middle, I would say a typical Portuguese expression.
Colar o pistão.
Which would mean something like, they will go nuts. Yeah. They, I don't know who they was, yeah, actually.
Crowd,
either way, back then, Facebook had this auto-translation by Bing.
Bing translator.
Oh man, long ago. Man.
And accidentally, I clicked the automatic translation, and the whole text was really twisted. Also because we were really talking in really informal Portuguese. So, and then this specific expression, "vão bater mal do pistão," yeah, was this? It will go nuts. Exactly, go nuts. Yeah. Let's say it was translated as getting all evil of the piston collar. Yeah, not in capital letters. Though, but then we just said, oh shit, what if we would
this is a song.
Getting All Evil of the Piston Collar. So I actually wrote a composition called Getting All Evil of the Piston Collar out of that phrase,
yeah,
out of the stupid phrase.
And it became the title track.
And then became the title track of the album. But it was not like a concept album or a concept track whatsoever by any.
Thanks, Bing.
Yeah, thanks to Bing, thanks to Facebook, back in the days, the good old days of Facebook.
Yeah.
But it's also a great piece of work. I think challenging a jazz demigod is my favorite from the album.
Oh, thank you for
that. Yeah. It's, you wrote it?
We write everything.
Now it's getting complicated. I feel the tension in the room.
So let's put it like this. The compositions... start on one of us, usually. But then they get composed between the three of us. But like the starting point, or the first draft, usually is made by one of us separately.
Yeah, someone has a vision an idea of something, and they put it on paper. But it's just notes on paper. Like, I think the real magic of this band is that once we start playing and rehearsing things, they take on a whole different shape, and it's beautiful. It's way better than what we envisioned at first.
Yeah, cool. That's great. But then 6 years of silence until you release this album now.
Well, it's hardly
a silence. Well, we actually...
yeah, well...
We played a lot.
Played a lot, but regarding releases, it's... I mean, six years between two albums is more than average, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, why?
It was also a very jumbo thing that happened to us. Mm-hmm. As we progressed in the years following the release, we were starting to play more and more. So we just...
But there's a twist to that.
There's also a twist. There's a drummer living in Lisbon, mm-hmm, wanting to finish a degree in composition. And there's a guitar player living in New York doing his master's, so...
We were living in almost, I mean, not that Porto and Lisbon are two different countries, but we were living in three separate areas, maintaining the group for mostly live activity. So we would get back together just to rehearse for the concerts, and we would give the concerts. And we played actually that album, that for a jazz album, because back then we were still jazz. we gave more than 60 concerts for one album. That's a lot.
And let's not forget that... there was an aspiring mastering engineer, bass player, in the end of the getting all the evil of the piston collar journey. So we were all three
on separate live tracks.
Yeah, sure.
And also beyond that, we were trying. We tried to get together like a lot of times to work on the second album. We spent many days composing together, residencies.
Our first composition residence for the new album actually happened in 2016, summer of 2016. So the first year we had this album released, we were already actively working on the next album. It was really out of lack of time that it didn't progress.
I understand. Okay. So You had your first live performance with your new album at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival, right? Was it the first one?
It was a pre-performance, actually.
Because it was, of course, it was before your release, because it didn't happen within the last 3 days. But
What happened was we had this residency. We had other ideas that we worked on.
We have a full another album.
We have
that's.
We did
halfway through rehearsed.
We did a what was it? It was a
what year is this? What?
It was a hi.
It was a bagel.
No, we
bagel.
We did a submission for a Criatório.
What's
called Criatório?
Criatório is like
It's a grand. Where we wanted also a very jamba thing to do. We wanted to continue Gustav Holst's The Planets.
Oh, that's true.
We did a submission about that. That was another idea.
New planets or
new planets? Yeah.
It was called the exoplanets.
Oh, the exoplanets.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh shit, man.
We're still gonna do this.
We wanted to video map the whole Porto Coliseum, but we didn't.
Planetarium.
It was it?
Yeah, it was Planetarium.
So actually, we just talked about two other albums that we envisioned and almost made it happen.
Yeah.
And accidentally, this was the one that made it through.
Yeah.
So I think this whole album is just a big accident. But we're still proud of it.
Yeah, we basically did the Cheltenham performance and just thought, wait, maybe we have something here. What if we just do another 20, 25 minutes of music?
It wasn't even 25. It was like
13,
12 minutes extra that we did.
But you were the opening act, right?
Yeah, we were.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And how was the feedback?
Pretty decent, actually. We had some warm feedback happening because it was live streamed, so you got to see the commentaries happening.
We had a couple of reviews.
And then we had some reviews.
Very.
Yeah. What was it? Downbeat? The Wire?
No, The Wire. No.
We had some British. Yeah. Two magazines or something writing. I don't know.
And they said really great stuff about us.
Oh yeah, they got into the universe.
They got into the jamba.
They got the jamba.
So Cheltenham was a success, and what other festivals did you play? You played a lot of festivals in the last couple of years, right? Can you just name some of them?
We'll say them as we remember. So we were actually at Germany. We were in Bremen at Jazz Ahead. Yeah, okay, so Jazz Ahead would be mine.
We played the Ljubljana Jazz Festival.
We played the Fresh Fish in Ghent, Belgium.
We played 12 Points in Dublin.
No, we played, what was that called?
Alternatilla
in Palma de Mallorca.
We did Sutirol Jazz Festival.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, not a festival, but we went to Joe's Pub in New York.
What's that? What kind of place is that?
It's actually a venue.
It's a central venue of the scene there. Yeah.
One of the.
It belongs to the theater.
To the public theater. It's like a cafe concerto in the public theater, which is like a big theater in the center of New York.
Yeah,
Manhattan. Downtown.
And was this just because they wanted to visit you, or was it just, were you booked to play there?
Actually, we were booked. So this was a collaboration between, how's it called?
Art Institute,
which is run by a Portuguese woman called Ana Miranda, living in Manhattan. And she and this guy, which Pedro, what was his relationship with Germany? He lived there? He worked there?
He lived in Germany.
Okay, so, and this guy had this other jazz association called Jazz Aqui, and so they would get fundings to do these kinds of things, to put Portuguese acts worldwide. Because this guy was based in Germany, he did more these kind of things between Germany and Portugal. But this was one of them, so he teamed up with the Art Institute, and he picked us up
to go. So it's actually a thing that came to us. One day we got a call. Do you want to come and play in New York? Everything is paid. Just come.
Yeah, we were asked at Amsterdam airport. Did we do the change in Amsterdam? It was in Amsterdam.
Yeah,
Amsterdam. Because of that, maybe we should go to security separated. Yeah, but I don't know why we forgot. And then the guy just asked, why are you two going to the United States together? If you're, what are you going to do there? Are you going to get any money?
Yeah, well, the thing is that you can't play in the United States unless you have a proper visa. And we didn't, of course. So I'm not sure if we should be saying this. We might be banned from the United States for 10 years. But, well, let's see.
Okay. I will beep it out. It's okay. It's all right.
Did we play anything else?
What?
Did we play anything else?
Well, we played a bunch of very big Portuguese festivals, like international, like Jazz em Agosto, which is big international.
Yeah, we did most of the Portuguese festivals. Casa da Música, Gulbenkian, of course, Coimbra.
São Luís.
Yeah,
Festa de Jazz.
And we played Festa da Cirrose here in Portugal.
So
in Porto.
Could be translated as Cirrhosis
party.
And it was really nice.
Let's just say nice. It was what it was, a Cirrhosis party.
Okay, the ones who have been there probably know what you guys are talking about. I unfortunately missed it. All right, so let's talk about your new album. For the unlucky ones who haven't listened to your album yet, what preparation advice would you give them before they sit or lay down to enjoy it?
Everybody's got to be properly naked before sitting in the sofa with the headphones or with the PA system.
Absolutely.
Where else?
I say you should drink like a big, big
bottle of water?
No, mug of coffee. Maybe three of them. Make them three.
You want people to get an anxiety attack?
No, you should then lay in bed, close your eyes and close the lights, and the coffee is to prevent people from falling asleep. I don't think anyone will fall asleep, but still, you want to be on the safe side of things.
To be honest, on the weekend, I was sitting, not naked, but in trunks, drinking four cups of coffee. We Germans love to drink a lot of coffee. I usually drink, like, I don't know, a liter or more every morning. And it's not the Portuguese coffee, so it's not the espresso, but it's the normal filter coffee. And I was listening to your album, and it actually worked quite well. So I can underline this advice. Do you have anything else to add?
Open heart. Because I'm the sentimental guy in the band, so I would say open heart.
Okay. Don't you think it's dangerous? In a way?
It is dangerous.
Yeah, especially with this thing.
It can be.
Because it can easily get intrusive, no? If people are really, really open, this album can get a little bit intrusive, definitely.
Well, it depends on your attachment style, of course, but I would leave to André to talk about attachment styles. it depends. I mean...
Okay, I got you there. So, guys, let's get serious. Let's talk about how shit, meat, and bones define if you are only existing or if you're alive. So let's please talk about Antonin Artaud.
All right.
And, well, you stated actually that Free Development of Delirium was inspired by a letter from Antonin Artaud. He wrote this to the medical directors of... lunatic asylums, as they were called back in the days, and it was released in the Revue de la Révolution Surréaliste from 1925, so which was, for everybody who doesn't know, this kind of art or kind of magazine, which is not longer available at your local gas station. So it was actually a magazine from the 20s. There are only, I think, 10 or 12 all in all.
Yeah.
And it was a small magazine by the brought out from the Surrealism movement, which was very, very posh at that time in France, and which actually came from Dadaism, as I recall, but a very interesting thing. And you won't mind if we laugh is also a quote out of this text.
Yeah.
So why did you choose this? You want to do?
I should do it because this was the starting point. As we said, our compositions usually have this individual starting point before we bring them to the band. And this was actually, we were just now talking about getting Al Divo of the Piston Collar, composed back in 2014. And this was actually composed right after it, also in 2014. So the first part of the suite, even aesthetically had some resemblances with our first album because of it, because it was composed 7 years ago during our first stage as a band. And what happened was that I didn't actually choose it. It actually came to me. I was at an old bookstore a book fair of some sort. And I bought a lot of books, and this compendium, so this was a compilation of open letters from Artaud. I don't have the actual magazine or a copy of the magazine whatsoever.
I found it as PDF.
Really? Mm-hmm. I would love to have it, actually. So what I do have, and it's right there in the other room, it's this compilation of a lot of letters published in different times of Artaud's life. And this one specifically to the directors of medical asylums has this statement of let your inner unresolved being come out freely and freely develop your deliriums. And the free development of delirium is actually a quote. It's expressly written there, and I remember that I've put it in underline and said, whoa, great statement. But like that, all the other letters as well. And so back then, I was really inspired to write about that kind of mental state. Not actually the crazy mental state, but more the bold mental state where you just go, okay, everything is legit. There's a wide palette of ways of being in life that we should embrace the same way we embrace the conservative ones. So this was it. I actually didn't write a conceptual piece in the sense that I would want like the specific words or specific ideas there, but more the general vibe, the general statement that I read and got from the letter, which is a statement, and that was what triggered me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, he actually states that it is not right to treat inmates like this, only keep them small and keep them confined with the help of brutality, which is the only force there is. But he actually also wrote a lot of other things in this statement, which are regarding if this is antisocial or in how far the social concepts can be found in there, which is actually also quite interesting. And I don't know if you also find this in...
We definitely were inspired by all of that. And I think, you know, we found like a... kind of like a lost relative when we read those letters. Yeah, like we identified with what he was saying, you know, in the sense that we're also a little bit counterculture. At least we began like that, and we like to believe that we are. Maybe we are not. It's possible. But our, you know, when we first started, we saw ourselves a little bit as a, you know, maybe a reaction to some things that we didn't agree with exactly in, you know, in the music scene or in the jazz scene or whatever. And, you know, we love playing jazz.
I'm going to add to this that we met, the three of us, while we were studying on the first year of jazz bachelor degree.
Yeah, jazz school. So, of course, as any, you know, as any student, we were a little bit revolted with a few things. But we decided to, you know, to do something productive out of it. And
let me just add something. We also have this, it's not just about the jazz scene, it's also about the, I guess, rock scene, because it also goes beyond that.
Yeah. But talking about nonconformity, and that's actually quite interesting, there comes this theater of cruelty. You might know about this. So it's actually just what, I mean, I wrote down some kind of definition which says it's a primitive ceremonial experience intended to liberate the human subconscious and reveal man to himself, which I think when I read this while listening the third time to your album, it was like, it everything was so clear at that point. And I just wanted to know if this is an accident again or if this is really deliberate.
I would say it's an accident, but it's there's a
connection.
There's a connection to I don't know.
It's a filtered accident.
Exactly.
It's a filtered accident because we are. I mean, we hate and love each other, of course. So sure. You need to play with that. Yeah. So there's the accident part of that, and then there's the deliverance, the real part where you need where you actually manage that.
And also, as Andrei was saying, reading these kind of things makes you feel like these guys that live one century before are like lost relatives. And why is this? Because we are a product of all of these thoughts and all of these movements. We whether we know about it, whether it's conscient or not, we are already a product of all of this because it generated culture that is still present. So, of course, theater of cruelty. I mean, we didn't read about it. We didn't see any piece about it. But the echoes of all of those experiments and all of those movements are present. And so, of course, when now we get back together, 21st century, and we pick this kind of subject, these kind of things will be here. Yeah. But I wouldn't say that it's an accident. I mean, it's a organic consequence of things, of centuries of things happening and moving.
Yeah, we have a good example. Like, we've been, especially with the...
I was thinking
more about King Crimson.
Also that, yeah.
We, with our first album, we had like a lot of people coming to us and saying, this really sounds like King Crimson. And you know, I've listened to a little bit of King Crimson, almost nothing. And I don't think any of us listened to it.
I listened to quite a few.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But I don't think we ever thought about King Crimson.
Yeah, it's not a major influence.
Yeah, we never thought about that it would be like a major influence. But it comes out, and we don't know how. We had other influences that maybe were influenced by King Crimson.
Yeah, so it's these lost echoes.
Yeah.
We are big on the Zappa and King Crimson
around. Yeah.
We are big on those.
Those guys link us to that kind of background.
I mean, if there's really one thing every band, every project should take out, if anybody says, "Hey, you sound like," just don't give a shit. Just go ahead doing your thing, because it's always in the end you always sound like something. But it's,
of course, it's human nature. You know, we try to find patterns. We try to put things in boxes, because otherwise it gets too confusing and we can't really deal with it. So it's part of it. We do it, you know, we do it as well.
Yeah. You try to make it to have sense for yourself. Yeah. So you have to find your own references.
Yeah, because we did this Jazz Zenga Quest, which is probably the biggest biggest in Portugal, International Jazz Festival. And it was the John Zorn edition where he played, I don't know,
with everybody.
20 concerts with 20 bands, like John Zorn extravaganza all the way. And people were wanting to take the John Zorn out of us, and we're like, well, we don't. We never actually listened to John Zorn, but we can, of course, see the what echoes from that. But we actually didn't take any influence from him.
So this to say that, of course, everything you're saying makes sense. But I guess the letters and that small text was just only it. It was the ignition point. But then the rest comes from the Rite of Trio's own chaotic processes.
Yeah, because it's so interesting. Because I could dig way deeper into this. We can talk about mise-en-scène. Mm-hmm. We can talk about stuff like this. We can talk about how... And this is also stuff I heard from... which one was it?
But I love that kind of...
I think it was Images of Control, I think. It was that one where I just thought, you know, everything is some kind of a codified message. Nothing is by accident, even if it's not planned, but it is just part of the whole. And this is something I really could see in there. I don't know if I make this up, because I just want to see a pattern somewhere, you know. I just need something to clinch on when I'm listening to your album. I don't know.
And we put this title in your face, so it's normal that you do it.
In this record, now that I'm thinking about the accident, actual deliverance, delivery, this record is full of it. It's full of accidents mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. accidents, and there's full of accidents that are deliberately placed.
Ah, yeah, yeah. That's true. We do have a section where it's written on the musical sheet, do it wrong, do the error, do yeah. really do the error, yeah. really play the error.
And even the small bits that interrupt yeah. the oh, yeah, solos, yeah. those were rehearsal recordings. There's a recording of Andre listening to Bill Evans on the car.
I don't think we should say that.
Yeah.
It's history. Nobody knows what
yeah, is. But it's just like a WhatsApp message or something. Yeah,
well, I have an idea.
Yeah, it was an
this thing doesn't have like a very good microphone. So I was listening to it on high volume and I was screaming something to them because I was excited about something. And it came like this beautiful saturated It came out like this beautiful saturated ocean of noise with, you know, at the very tail end with a little bit of a bright piano sounding like Duncan, go, go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, it was beautiful and we were like, well, let's just use this. And it's amazing.
It's really cool. And I mean, in our podcast, but we're already talking about a lot of, especially electronic projects, more or less, mm-hmm. who work a lot with that stuff, with just randomly recorded stuff, mm-hmm. which then built the base for their composition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were talking about, you know, Font Violeta. I don't know if you know them. They're from Brazil. Two girls doing amazing stuff, just working actually which is with real recorded stuff and with all their synths and samplers and filters and whatever. And it's super interesting how sometimes things like this can, you know, change or form mm-hmm. the way you're going.
You just actually have to be open to embrace the randomness.
Yeah, you have to hear it.
Make something out of it.
Exactly, yeah.
Must have eaten something. Must have eaten something that was bad. What did I drink something?
You drink about your own.
Dream about what?
I read that the rite of trio is a metaphor of life. In a 2017 interview with a jazz noise. Mm-hmm. And you all stated that life was one of your main non-musical influences. Well, Philippe actually said not dying, but that's actually the same from another angle. What do you mean by that? Or is this just some stuff you said in an interview?
Oh, shit.
It's still our
motto
slogan. Yeah.
The metaphor for life.
I think we were using it because we've always tried to fill our music with as many concepts and ideas from life, even, you know, non-musical ideas as we could. And like a great example of it is humor. And
yeah,
people can identify that in our music a lot in the first album. And I think they can identify it in our second album as well. So we've always tried to, you know, imprint a little bit of all shapes and forms of life that we can find, and we've tried to put it so it's serious, it's humorous, it's intense, it's relaxed. So we try to somehow. So that's an interesting
yes.
point. It's like a painting that has, you know, that has all kinds of shades.
Don't worry.
And it drives you to many different aspects of life and different moods.
When we started the band, and the whole trigger was this, there was some kind of teenage vibe onto it. We were really not like revolted, not like as we were angry about anything. We were just so full of life, so full of ideas, so full of statements. And so we made the band actually to put all of those into shape, all of those statements. So what we always wanted is this project, this band, this connection that we have to be as less restricted as possible. So we do have this motto to be open to all the chaos, all the things that make sense and all the things that don't make any sense, all the things that are under control and the things that are completely not under control, the things that we are predicting to be one way and all the things that at the end turn out to be any other way. And that applies both to the composition, to the residency and the rehearsal process, but also to the improvisations on stage and also to the way we deal with the outcomes of all of it. So I think all of that is in metaphor of life. We really want this to be a metaphor of life, not just this slim frame of an idea of life, which could be a thing. I mean, we could have this specific statement. Which
most of the music is.
Yeah. But here we are really open that this band in one album is one thing, on the other could be a completely drastically different thing. And on the third album, we do only noise. And on the fourth album, we only use voices.
Well, we've talked about doing an album just with Christmas carols sang by us and you know, maybe arranged in the right of trio way. Everything's possible.
It is. I mean, I was playing keyboard a couple of months ago with my friends, so who knows where I will end up.
Yeah, we actually play screams on this album, right?
Yeah.
And we play sheets of paper.
We play
feedback and guitar noise and whatever.
there was once this. I don't know if it's online, but we did the last movement of the Rite of Spring. We played it live. The last movement of the Stravinsky's Rite of Spring,
sacrificial dance.
Sacrificial dance, yeah. And Pedro told us to put our feet in lava, so. That, it was on the arrangement, so I don't know.
When you write songs or when you rehearse, do you actually get drunk?
Never.
I had a friend who saw. I think he heard the album and he asked what kind of drugs were we in.
And so far, there was never a drug in this process.
Yeah, I think. I think that sentence. That's what one of my podcasts from another podcast colleague once said, which I think is really smart. He said people asking you if you were on drugs while writing this it's just a symbol of non-creative people, or just like a speech from non-creative people who can't understand that you just come up with this, you know? So it's just a very poor statement, and I really hate it. And it's so stupid. I mean, but it's just...
As a compliment, like, well, I know what drugs do to us, and it's quite crazy and interesting. But we didn't need that. So if it makes you feel that way, then we probably did something right in the creative sense.
I don't know, but this actually sounds to me like, just take this drug... And then play drums, and then you'll be just as good as you guys. I mean, that's bullshit, you know? just take the Rite of Trio pill, you know? And
exactly.
Yeah, that's crap, because it's coming out of you guys. So I don't know.
Actually, it's good because we don't need to have this deal between the band that no one gets drunk, because no one would want to get drunk playing this music or take any drugs.
So the first composition of the band... Now is really pertinent to mention because it's called Serious Business. And that's both ironic and actually serious, because this is a serious business in the sense that it's not serious at all, but we take it seriously.
Sure, absolutely. Let's put a little side note in here. There is another very interesting but also very different sounding project called Pedro Melo Alves Omni Ensemble.
Oh, wow.
What can you tell me about that?
So that was also a release of this on this 15th of October batch by Cleanfield. What can I say about it? It's also the expansion of a project I had already had in 2017. I had my Omni Ensemble, which was a septet where I wrote music to as part of a composition award I got back then. And last year I got this commission from Guimarães Jazz Festival to expand that into an orchestral version. So last year, coming out of the first lockdown of the pandemics, I was here stuck in studio doing these arrangements for large ensemble. It was premiered last year and recorded live, and now it's being released as an album, and we are also doing three concerts. We had the release concert happening last week, and now we're going to have the remaining two concerts this week.
That's great. I will definitely put a link to that in the show notes too, so you can check it out. Is there actually a big jazz scene in Portugal? I'm sorry, I have no idea. Are there many jazz bands?
I mean, we are aware of it existing, of course, but
it's quite big.
It's big, yeah.
It is quite big.
I think it's really big. And I mean, for our size and for our dimension in terms
of... No, I'm saying that we are aware of it, of its dimension. Not that people from outside know of its size, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, isn't that normal?
I mean, this coming from the fact that Portugal is not... a country with its finances in a healthy condition. I think it's a condition of the south of Europe in a way. And so for us, it's more stimulating to go abroad to play because the other scenes in Europe are, the other northern scenes are richer in the literal sense and the artistic sense also, because there's more possibilities in general. And I think that our scene is actually really big considering the lack of, mm-hmm. of conditions we do have mm-hmm. as a country. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a case study. I see many international critics and journalists writing about the Portuguese scene and finding it surprising, given our size, given the fact that we are on the far edge of Europe. We have all to have nothing or to have way less than we do have. But I think we have a good scene.
Yeah.
Considering all this.
It's thriving for sure. And there's a lot of projects, there's a lot of musicians, and there's a lot of festivals. Like just the other day we received the list with Portuguese jazz festivals, and it's a huge list. I would say maybe 40, 50 jazz festivals, which is insane. I don't even think we have that many cities in Portugal.
Yeah, I mean, let's remind guys in Germany that we have a country with 10 million people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're in 650 kilometers, you drive from north to south, and that's it. So it's really a small country.
Yeah. And when you look outside of Portugal into Europe or the rest of the world, where do you have the most fans outside of Portugal?
Oh, Spain. That's what Spotify says.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
And felt like when you play somewhere, where you get the most positive feedback?
We had probably the most positive feedback was in Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
But I mean, it's not representative of Ireland, of Northern Ireland, because it was on a festival, mostly with promoters and other artists from abroad, from the other European cities that were selected that year. So
it was a very specific circumstance, like the Ride of Trio were formed in 2012 when the three of us were attending that festival when it was in Porto. It came to Porto. It's like an it switches places every year. And in 2012, it was in Porto, and we were, the three of us were attending it, and after that, we decided that we'd start this band. And then in 2018...
6 years later.
6 years later, and after trying for 3 or 4 years to get there, we finally played there, and we told a story on stage, and I think everybody loved the story, and everybody was very emotional, and we got a beautiful standing ovation, and we got like some nice mentions after the festival. Yeah. And all of that. So, yeah, it just made sense.
I mean, we were talking with people for 2.5 hours or 3 hours.
Yeah. After the gig?
Yeah. It was special.
Yeah, like some people abandoned the venue while there were still concerts happening to come outside and talk to us. And we sold out our CD there. Our first CD was sold out on that night.
That's true.
It was special.
How were your experiences in Germany then?
It was a peculiar one because it was the jazz I had. It's a showcase festival, so we only played for 25-30 minutes.
For the test.
Yeah.
It's online. But it was not
I mean,
a proper concert. So
it's a showcase. Yeah, it's not a full concert. And back then we were playing the full album, which has a lot of different shapes, and we had to select just a representation of it.
So your next gig will be here in Porto mm-hmm. on the 11th, right?
11th and 12th.
Yeah, and on 12th in Lisboa.
Yeah.
And so what's next? When are you coming to Germany?
Actually...
You tell me.
Yeah, yeah, it might happen out of this interview, who knows. But we are actually now planning, because, I mean, the album is finally out 6 years later. And since we played a lot internationally now, and also with the big support, before we were releasing on CleanFeed, CleanFeed was also already supporting us, we have to say it. And many of these international festivals that we had was with their support. And we know that already, since the album is out, there's people are talking about it again. And we know that we're going to put our energy and our efforts into putting this on the road next year.
Yeah,
so I think people should expect us at least in the summer.
I would say so. But if you have any ideas, we are here.
Yeah.
We can talk.
Sure, sure. I mean, I'm not organizing festivals. All I can do is tell you where you should or shouldn't probably go. But I mean, jazz is very, very special. Also, I mean, in Germany, it is. I mean, there's one jazz festival, which is one of the biggest, I think, which is more or less around the corner of the place where I grew up. But the point is, it's so super, how do you say, conservative.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, a lot of big band jazz, a lot of this and that. And people will just probably fall dead when you play live for 5 minutes. So I don't know. But I mean, maybe it's a chance. And I mean,
yeah, it depends a lot on the on who's who's doing the lineup, like the who's making
the lineup.
Yeah.
Curation.
Because what we've found out is that even when people are used to more conservative or traditional jazz,
yeah, that's
when we go there and we present the stuff that we do, and everyone can see that, you know, we've put a lot of effort in it. We're not just, you know, hitting the drums on drugs. people really relate to it, and it's people from all walks of life, like you know, any person that would never dream or dare to listen to us, they'll come to us and be like, this was amazing, we really enjoyed yeah, it. Yeah, I think we have to say that this is a live phenomenon band. So the real thing happens live on stage. Even though we are really proud of the album, our biggest thing happens in this connection with live people. That's why that Andre was explaining happens. People that probably don't like our genre, and probably they will even like the album at home. But live, they will connect with a lot of layers of what we do. And this will add up even one more thing, is that we are not restricted by any means just to the jazz circuit. I mean, there's a lot of evident rock background in what we do, an experimental background in what we do, and I think it's expanding more and more. And I think we could and should play in a lot of the different circuits outside of jazz.
Yeah, that's also what I think, because I actually see a totally different kind of audience in here, which is mixed out of like independent rock and people like, I mean, because if you look into like the into progressive metal and stuff like this, you know, it's at a certain point it's a thin line, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're still playing jazz, but at a certain point it's just like, you know, the feeling which you have probably live is absolutely comparable, you know. It even has way more freedom, which people will love. So so maybe jazz festivals are not the first place to go, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know. I just from my point of view within Germany.
I agree. Okay. I agree. Not that, I mean, we've done it and it was really awesome, but I think we can expand. Yeah. And do the jazz festival, of course.
Yeah, of course. No, it's not doing the jazz festival, it's doing not that and more.
Yeah.
Okay, great, guys. So out there, everybody, check out The Rites of Trio. They have a lot of especially live videos online, which you can check out to get an idea what it really means to see them live and to get really an idea of what's happening on stage. Thanks a lot for having me here and for the pizza and the beer. And I really enjoyed it talking to you guys. And it's it's quite a task you have here and quite something you built here. And congratulations on your album again. So I hope to see you live on the 11th.
Yeah,
and yes. Yeah, I'm wishing you all the best. I hope that you will have the chance to come to Germany anytime soon. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Ja, Martin, das waren meine, ich weiß gar nicht, wie lang es jetzt war irgendwie, aber das war meine Zeit mit The Rite of Trio und deren Proberaum.
Ja, sehr, sehr entspannt, muss ich sagen. Sehr, sehr angenehm zu hören auch.
Ja, ja. Ich meine, ich hoffe, euch da draußen hat es auch gefallen soweit, weil es war ja auch das erste Mal, dass wir das jetzt in so einem, dass wir dieses Konzept jetzt erstmal ja,
Interview-Schwerpunkt haben.
Ganz ne? Genau, ja. Ist natürlich auch, ja, es war, hat auch echt super Spaß gemacht, weil wir, keine Ahnung, wir haben über so viele Sachen dann auch davor und danach noch gesprochen. Ich habe es ja auch jetzt vor dem Interview schon erwähnt. Mhm. Und als wir dann fertig waren mit dem Interview, habe ich mir nochmal deren Partituren angeguckt, weil da haben die ja auch während des Interviews drüber gesprochen. Und das war echt total wahnsinnig. Also ich habe es ja mal erwähnt, ich habe ja auch eigentlich eine klassische Musikausbildung hinter mir und kann auch Partituren einigermaßen noch lesen oder Noten grundsätzlich. Und das Bekloppte bei denen war halt einfach, dass super viele Parts wirklich bis zur letzten Kleinigkeit komplett musikalisch ausdefiniert waren und andere Parts waren einfach echt völlig frei. Und das hat er auch im Interview gesagt. Ich weiß jetzt nicht, ob es so rausgekommen ist, aber es gab dann so auch so eine Stelle, wo dann einfach die Noten besagen, spiel den Teil davor, aber spiel ihn bewusst falsch und solche Sachen. Ja, also mit solchen Spielereien zu arbeiten, aber das trotzdem halt musikalisch konzeptionell umzusetzen, ist halt wirklich auch eine Kunst. Und ich meine, ich kann auch keinem vorwerfen, der sich das anguckt und der dann irgendwie sagt, ey, die machen da irgendwas. Da macht ja jeder irgendwie irgendwas. Mhm. Ich glaube, das ist auch so dieses Ding, wo die meisten Leute, glaube ich, auch einfach ein Problem mit haben. Weißt du, bei so einer Musik?
Weil ich glaube, einfach der Zugang fehlt, ne? Oder einfach dieser völlig Freimachen davon, ne? Dass es irgendwie immer so eine klassische Songstruktur geben muss.
Ja, ja, genau. Genau.
Dass man halt einfach auch, ich meine, ich hatte das ja ganz am Anfang gesagt, dass wenn man den Ort sucht, wo man am weitesten von so einem Mainstream weg ist, dann ist man da wahrscheinlich ganz gut an dem richtigen Ort dann angekommen. Aber da ist halt immer die Frage, ne, wie offen ist man dafür und oder ist es der richtige Moment oder die richtige Zeit oder keine Ahnung. Ne? Also ich glaube, das kann man auch Leuten nicht immer unbedingt vorwerfen, dass man da vielleicht gar nichts erstmal so mit anfangen kann, ne? Oder keinen Zugang findet.
Ja, vollkommen richtig. Also der richtige Moment, da hast du absolut mit recht. Wenn man es mal so vergleicht mit beispielsweise Malerei, kann man ja auch sagen, man stellt einfach jetzt mal zwei Bilder nebeneinander und das eine ist halt eine realistische Darstellung einer Szene. Aber es ist total gut gemalt und die Technik und die Farben und alles ist halt super. Und daneben hat man halt eine völlig abstrakte Darstellung. Mhm. Es ist wesentlich schwerer, sich auf eine abstrakte Darstellung einzulassen. Mhm. Oder sagen wir mal, nehmen wir mal eine expressionistische Darstellung, wo man einfach sagt, da steckt so viel Emotion einfach auch in der Malerei selbst drin. Mhm. Und die Emotion ist halt das, was dann so ein Bild von einem Foto unterscheidet, sagen wir mal. Und deren Musik ist halt kein Foto, sondern es ist halt einfach emotional aufgeladen, im Positiven, aber vor allen Dingen auch im Negativen oder im Wahnsinnigen oder im Umgang damit. Es ist ja auch sehr kritisch, ja. Und wo ich auch glaube, wo viele Leute ein Problem mit haben, ist, wenn dann plötzlich auch Sachen, wie wir es ja auch im Interview gehört haben, durch Unfälle entstehen, also einfach durch Zufall. Und ich glaube, das ist für viele Leute unglaublich schwer zu akzeptieren, dass auch Zufälle einfach einen unglaublich hohen künstlerischen Wert haben mhm. und auch der Dreh- und Angelpunkt werden können mhm. für alles, was man dann darauf konzipiert.
Ja. Ja.
Ich glaube, das ist so, das ist eines der schwierigsten Dinge in der Kunst. So. Mhm. Ja, dass man einfach akzeptiert, dass Unfälle eigentlich ein Geschenk sein können.
Ja, das ist halt, es entbehrt ja jeder Struktur, jeder Planung. Ist ja genau das Gegenteil davon. Und das dann aber halt, gibt es ja immer diesen klischeehaften Satz fast schon von mir, das kann ja jeder.
Genau.
Ne?
Ja.
Aber dann soll es halt jeder halt mal machen. Ne? Und genau. dann merkt man eigentlich, glaube ich, an der Stelle, wie schwierig es eigentlich ist. Halt vielleicht selber auch die Überwindung zu haben, das dann so zu machen.
Absolut.
Wenn es dann überhaupt Überwindung eigentlich im Kern überhaupt bedarf. Ne?
Klar.
Also da könnte man jetzt viel, viel drüber philosophieren.
Ja, also. Absolut. Ja. Nach der Beuyschen Vorstellung sind wir alle Künstler. Und ja. jeder hat das Potenzial dazu.
Mhm.
Genau. Ich glaube, das große Missverständnis ist einfach, dass es random ist, was da passiert. Mhm. Oder dass man einfach irgendwas macht und sagt, das ist jetzt Kunst. Ich glaube, wenn jemand hingeht und irgendwas macht und sagt, das ist Kunst, auch selbst dann würde ich das auch mit dem Auge mir angucken.
Mhm.
Und spätestens dann würde dann demjenigen es doch sehr unangenehm sein, vielleicht, wenn er irgendwie auch dann merkt, dass es gar nicht so gemeint war, aber auch, dass er vielleicht auch gar nicht so dahinter steht.
Mhm.
Und so ist die Trennung halt so schwierig. Ja? Weil ich glaube gerade so, dass die Dinge so dadaistisch für jemanden und so kindlich oder kindisch oder albern oder random sind, das ist, glaube ich, echt was, ja, wo ich mir wünschen würde, dass es einen einfacheren Zugang vielleicht doch manchmal dazu gäbe. Dass es vielleicht so eine Brücke gibt, die einen da so hinbringt. Ja. Und das ist, glaube ich, auch was, wo auch mal wieder das deutsche Schulsystem komplett versagt.
Ja, also ich habe da jetzt gerade so, seitdem du es gesagt hast, jetzt sind ja nicht viele Sekunden vergangen, drüber nachgedacht, ob man denn da es wäre schön, es gäbe einen einfacheren Zugang. Keine Ahnung. Vielleicht ist es ja auch wirklich, also hängt es einfach von der Person an sich ab, die damit konfrontiert wird.
Ja.
Und wie die vielleicht von sich aus und auch vielleicht ohne nachzudenken, sich darauf einlässt.
Ich finde es ja so geil mit Kids. Mhm. Wenn man kleine Kinder hat, die anfangen zu malen, ja, dann malen die halt so kleinen Kinderkram. Der ist aber auch cool und als selbst auch so als Eltern oder als Großmutter hast du aber gut gemacht und so und das ist total toll. Wenn man jetzt so als, ich sag mal so, 40-Jähriger versucht so zu malen, das ist echt schwierig, weil man, selbst wenn es am Ende dann so aussieht, hat man bei jedem Strich überlegt, dreimal.
Ja, es ist halt total gedankengesteuert, ne?
Genau.
So.
Also
wie du richtig sagst, genau. Man hat halt sich alles überlegt.
Ja, und wenn man nämlich dann wirklich sagt, ah, dann, das kann ich auch, ja, dann, wie du schon gesagt hast, dann mach doch mal und guck mal, ob du das wirklich, ob du diesen kindlichen Spirit einfach mal so kopieren kannst. Das ist nämlich alles gar nicht so
einfach. Ja, und dann ist die Frage, soll man, also ist es dann wirklich die Frage, ob man da was kopieren will oder ist das was man in sich trägt und dann einfach rauslässt?
Klar, und in dem Fall jetzt hier auch gerade bei der Band oder grundsätzlich auch bei der Musik, man muss ja auch dieses scheiß Instrument beherrschen. Mhm. Also ich meine, das kommt ja halt auch nochmal erschwerend hinzu. Mhm. Und wenn man halt mal wirklich auf die Details guckt und sieht, wie die Jungs halt auch einfach ihre Instrumente im Griff haben und eine Einheit mit denen sind und sie auch und auch Liebe mit ihnen machen. Das ist halt was ja, gerade bei klassischen Instrumenten, das bedarf so viel Übung und so viel Disziplin, dass es eigentlich ein Wunder ist, dass so ein Freiheitsgrad am Ende noch erreicht werden kann, wenn ich eigentlich so eine disziplinierte Beziehung mit meinem Instrument habe. Dass ich eigentlich jeden Tag 3 Stunden damit üben muss, dass ich mich auch dazu zwingen muss, völlig egal, wie ich drauf bin und so, ich muss wirklich am Ball bleiben und am Ende dann noch irgendwie diese freiheitliche Beziehung zu haben zu meinem Instrument, also muss man auch erstmal schaffen. Also da steckt wesentlich mehr dahinter, als man vielleicht so als Konsument glaubt.
Ja.
Und wenn es einem am Ende nicht gefällt, gefällt es einem nicht. Ich meine, so ist es halt. Wenn man nichts damit anfangen kann, kann man nichts damit anfangen. Aber das Interview hat mir einfach gezeigt, also keine Ahnung, hört man halt nur das Interview, weil die 3 Jungs sind wirklich echt sehr sympathisch und ich drücke ihnen auf jeden Fall die Daumen für die Zukunft. Ja,
und absolut.
Für mich ist das sehr vielversprechend.
Ja, ist auch cool.
Alles klar.
Super gut gefallen.
Also an dieser Stelle nochmal, ich habe es ja auch während des Interviews gesagt, The Right of Trio. Ihr findet es auch überall auf Spotify und Deezer und die Links findet ihr sowieso bei uns auf unserer Seite zimmerlautstärke.jetzt und jetzt auch mit einer neuen Rubrik, nämlich mit den Interviews. Und ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Ich meine, es war der erste Versuch. Es werden weitere Folgen, weitere sind auch schon angedacht und geplant. Und ja, also Martin, hast du noch ein paar abschließende, gut gemeinte Worte?
Ja, also mich holst du mit so Sachen ja eh immer ab. Das ist ja kein Geheimnis. Und dann freut es mich einfach nur, wenn es andere Menschen auch abholt, die dann auch zufällig dann noch bei uns reinhören.
Wenn es euch gefallen hat, teilt euch, teilt unsere zerteilt euch und verteilt euch. Ja. Ich fange mal von vorne an. Ja, ich fange nochmal von vorne an. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, ja, dann tut uns doch den Gefallen. Sagt all euren Freunden Bescheid, zeigt euren Eltern The Right of Trio und brecht danach den Kontakt ab. Bewertet uns auf Spotify, ich glaube vor allen Dingen auch auf
Apple Podcast.
Das wäre wirklich total super.
Ja. Vielleicht auch im Negativ-Rating.
Wir warten ja immer noch drauf, genau. Wir haben, glaube ich, ein Negativ-Rating haben wir bekommen.
Das kann sein.
Aber das haben wir, genau.
Das war's, glaube ich.
Macht, was ihr wollt. Es ist, im Endeffekt spielt es für uns keine Rolle. Ja. Der nächste musikalische Beitrag wird vermutlich nicht ganz so wahnsinnig, aber auf jeden Fall genauso anstrengend. Und ja, ich hoffe, es hat euch Spaß gemacht. Ich wünsche euch einen wunderschönen Tag, Abend.
Ja.
Zeit unter der Dusche, Zeit für euch selbst. Nehmt euch Zeit für euch selbst, das ist wichtig.
Ja, genau. Ja, also unterschätzt man oft.
Stimmt. Tschüss.
Macht's gut.
Ciao.
Now, if my life was a movie, there would be some dramatic music.
Your life is a misery boy.
There would be some dramatic music right now. Where is it?